Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us for today's episode, we have Howard Headley. Howard is the current president and CEO of Utah Bankers Association, where he has served faithfully for over 25 years. As a leader in Utah Bankers Association, Howard has successfully launched several national initiatives to improve efficiencies in the banking industry, increase accountability, and provide better service for customers. In addition to improving the banking industry, Howard is passionate about public education and has founded one of the largest charter public schools in Utah. Howard, welcome to the show.
Daniel, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, Howard, at the start of all of our podcasts, I like to ask people how they got involved in banking, because banking is this broad, wide-sweeping industry. So how did you get started here in banking?
Well, I started in public accounting. I worked for KPMG, and my biggest clients were banks, and I did a lot of different types of things for our clients, and I was fascinated by banking and the role it plays in our economy, in our community. And when the position of the Utah Bankers Association came open, I applied and was fortunate enough to be selected. And from there, I got even more passionate about, again, the role the banking plays in our communities, in our economy. And I just haven't been able to leave. I love the people I work with. I love the people I work for. I love what we do in our communities. And I'm, as you can tell, I'm very passionate about what banks do in our world that makes everybody's lives better.
For sure. I completely agree. So as president of Utah Bankers Association, what does your day look like? So average day, you started off, what are you doing?
Well, every day is different, and it really depends a lot on what's happening in the world of politics. And I know right there, a lot of bankers say, oh, I don't want to let's talk about politics. I want to hear about politics. Politics has become so polarized in our world today. People just want to tune out. But I hear a lot of people say, hey, I'm not interested in politics. My answer to them is, well, politics is interested in you, and it's particularly interested in banking, because they know what I know. Basically, banking is central to everything that happens in our world. And people on the right and the left understand that, you know, they can't control the way our world looks and works if they can't control banking. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that on the banking committees, you get people there, some people that don't care at all about banking, but they care about what banking can do for a constituency group of theirs. And it gets very frustrating, because you'll talk to them about specific issues, policies that impact the way the banks operate, and they don't really care. They just want to see, what can the banks do for my constituency group? And so it's a fascinating world that I've discovered here. Again, I'm passionate about it. Yeah, I go back all the way to the founding of our country. And let me just set this in context for why I'm passionate about this. The thing that our country did different than any other country in the history of the world is we determined that the right to the pursuit of happiness was as fundamental as the right to life and the right to liberty. Mm-hmm. So we all familiar with right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That was unique to America. And since that time, hundreds of thousands, millions of Americans have served to defend those rights, those fundamental rights. I'm passionate about people who serve in the military, and I'm passionate about banking, because without banking, the pursuit of happiness in America doesn't exist. It doesn't happen. And so we are fundamental, we are central to this wonderful American notion that makes us unique as a country. You think about all the pursuits of happiness that people, you know, embark on their lives in terms of buying a home or getting an education, starting a business, pursuing their dreams, doesn't happen without banking. And that's why I'm as passionate about that as I am about people serving in the military and defending those rights. We defend those rights But that doesn't, that serves no purpose if we don't have the ability to pursue those rights. And that's why I'm passionate about it. But that's why a lot of politicians are passionate about it as well. And so my day really reflects whatever the latest, you know, thing is. And I think we'll talk about that today. Is, I mean, we've just had this episode with Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, and a lot of new discussions about some very old topics like FDIC insurance. You know, what you would consider to be old and boring topic, but it's central to what we do, right? FDIC insurance is, that's what makes us a bank. You're not a bank if you don't have FDIC insurance. And it's that low cost source of funding. It's that use of people's money while they're not using it, deploying it in our communities to build our economy. That is what banking is. And when you start talking about FDIC insurance, you're talking about the very heart of what we're doing. And so that's one of the, you know, all of a sudden, I've been here 25 years. I've talked about FDIC insurance twice-ish, you know, during the financial crisis of 2008. And it's a good opportunity. You have to seize those moments when people actually want to talk about these important issues and make sure that we're educating people, helping them understand that, you know, the concept of FDIC insurance in this case. And then if we're going to adopt any changes, making sure we're adopting changes that that build and don't erode, you know, again, what makes America great. So that's my day. It changes depending upon, you know, where the policy initiatives are coming from. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, Daniel, because people don't understand the goal of the Utah Bankers Association, in conjunction with the goal of every other state banking association, Texas Bankers, Missouri Bankers, Kansas Bankers, and the American Bankers Association, together we form an alliance. And it's kind of this policy safety net. And it requires strong advocacy in every state combined with a coordinated effort at the national level, because these policy issues that affect banking, that actually impact every banker that might be listening to this every day, right? Policy really impacts the way we function. And those policies come out of every direction. We focus a lot on Washington, D.C., but sometimes these bad ideas and sometimes good ideas, they come out of state level legislatures, and they grow state to state. They come out of the courts, which can happen again at a more federal level. But then those courts are stationed within communities. And so you've got to have a kind of a state and a federal team that works together in a coordinated fashion in order to influence all the policies that end up impacting the banks on a day-to-day basis.
So let me kind of interrupt there really quick. So what you're talking about, and correct me if I'm mistaken, you're talking about the Alliance of Bankers Association. Is that correct?
That's right.
So what is the alliance? I know you mentioned like what it does, how it kind of works together to accomplish those things, but what is the Alliance of Bankers Association? Is every Bankers Association a part of this? Like, what? Tell me a little bit about what the actual alliance is.
Well, I'm sure that all bankers associations, to some extent, work together to for the most part toward what, you know, we believe is good policy that will allow America's banks to thrive. The Alliance of Bankers Associations, formally though, is a network of 51 states and Puerto Rico. So 50 states and Puerto Rico, and with the American Bankers Association in Washington, D.C. And that is formally the alliance as it exists today.
So then what is your role with the Alliance of Bankers Association? Do you have a specific role with them, or do you just participate as president of the Utah Bankers Association?
Well, the alliance is exactly what it sounds like. It's an alliance. So no one has governance over the other. The American Bankers Association doesn't have any governance over any of the states. This Utah Bankers doesn't have governance over any other state.
Right.
So we're all autonomous, but the alliance is a document that we've all adopted unanimously, which kind of has the rules of the road and our mission and our vision going forward is to, again, our role is to influence policy that impacts banks in a way where banking can thrive in the United States of America. And that policy comes from every direction. And so we have to have a strong alliance in every state and in Washington, D.C. in order to make sure we can influence that, whether it's a proposed rule coming out of the banking agencies in Washington, D.C., or a law being considered by Congress, or a law being considered by a state and maybe multiple states. We're seeing a lot of that now. We're seeing Republican states kind of pushing laws that look one way and Democrat states pushing laws that work the other way. And what we don't want to see is a situation where banks have to decide, do I want to be a red bank or a blue bank? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to focus in on these Republican states because they're more conducive to the way we want to do business. Or I'm going to be more focused in these blue state areas and issues. It's really a very troubling phenomena that's happening right now, where states like California are saying, listen, you know, we don't want you making loans into these areas of energy and fossil fuels and so forth. And then states like Utah and Texas saying, if you don't make loans into these areas, we're going to punish you. Mm-hmm. And at some point as a bank, you start saying, oh, how am I going to keep the legislators and the governor of California happy and the governor and the legislators in Texas happy? How do I navigate that path? So it's troubling from all, you know, whether it's a bad idea coming out of Washington or whether it's a bad idea coming out of groups of states, you've got to have this alliance, this strong voice in every state working in conjunction with a strong voice in Washington, D.C. in order to have an impact on policy that affects banking every day.
And I can really appreciate that. And I completely agree that it's important to have at least an overall objective to make banking more feasible and more possible throughout the United States. Because when you do kind of get into the more divided businesses, it does get difficult because you have to make the choice of like what target markets can I operate in and what markets can I not operate in. And when you're asking those kind of questions, it makes things challenging for small banks, mid-sized banks, and even large banks, because they're having to offer specific products in specific markets and not in others. So I really appreciate that. So I know, Howard, you've gotten involved in a lot of different initiatives, like Society of Bank Executives, Regulatory Feedback Initiative, Friends of Traditional Banking. Like initiatives are very, very much evidently a passion of yours and something that you excel at. What advice do you have about looking to join an initiative? Like where should I go to find these initiatives? How do I find these initiatives? What should I be looking for in an initiative? What kind of advice do you have around that?
Well, it's all about kind of our passion and these are all aligned with what I just explained. Mm-hmm. As you start to try to influence policy so that banks can thrive and Americans can pursue the American dream, can pursue happiness. It requires a lot of tools in the toolbox, right? And the mm-hmm. Bankers Alliance, the Compliance Alliance was one of those initiatives. And it came out of, you know, the Texas bankers, but trying to help banks wrestle with this very complicated compliance landscape. The Friends of Traditional Banking was another tool in the toolbox. And I remember working hand in hand with Texas Bankers Association, Colorado, Oklahoma, in building that. The Friends of Traditional Banking is just a list of people who are passionate about banking in the country. And I mean, everybody knows about PACs, right?
Right.
Politics and policy in PACs, money. You can't separate money from politics. As much as people would like to and think that it would be noble to do, you just can't do it because, in effect, you've got to be able to get your message as a politician out to people, mm-hmm. and that costs money. If you want people to make an informed decision on who to vote for, you can't make an informed decision unless you know what somebody believes in. And, mm-hmm. you know, ideally the advertisements and the materials that they send out are honest and true and they reflect how they really believe. But, you've got to be able to communicate with voters, mm-hmm. and that costs money. And so you have these PACs, and what PACs do is a whole bunch of people give money to a PAC, like the Utah Bankers Association PAC or the American Bankers Association mm-hmm. PAC. They all give money, and then the PAC gives money to politicians, but they're limited as how much they can give.
Right.
And that's the traditional model. Friends of Traditional Banking is different. Friends of Traditional Banking kind of steps aside from that PAC and just says, listen, if you're passionate about banking, if you're passionate about what banking does and defending banking in America, sign up. Just go to our website, sign up your name. And then every election cycle, we pick the two races in the whole country. So it could be a congressional race out of mm-hmm. Texas. It could be a Senate race out of Montana. It could be any race around the country. And we say, this particular person is going to have an enormous impact on banking. Mm-hmm. And so we go out to all the people who've signed up and say, send whatever you can directly to that person or directly to that person's opponent, right? It may be we did that with Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren has a huge impact on banking, and it's not a good one. And so we chose her opponent and said, everybody who feels passionately about banking needs to send whatever they can. If it's $25, if it's $250, if it's $2,000, send it to her opponent. Now we've only did that once, right? We only chose an opponent once. Typically we're trying to reward people who understand banking, who are, you know, passionate about maintaining banking in the country. And we go in and we ask people to send them money directly. But in that, what's unique about that is there's no limit. So if we had 20,000 people who are passionate about banking in the country, and they all sent, you know, $100 or $150 or $1,000, right. a different amount, you could clearly push millions of dollars into a race and really impact that race. And while that's really helpful to make sure that friends of traditional banking win re-election and that enemies of traditional banking lose elections, what it also does is it gets people talking back in Congress. And when we can push $500,000 into a race, that gets people's attention back in Washington. And they tell their colleagues and say, hey, I just got $500,000 from 1,000 bankers all across the country. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Really? What did you have to do that? Well, I had to be rational about my votes on banking. And we've been doing this for about 12 years now. And we've had a lot of success. And so if anybody is passionate about making sure people get elected that understand what banking is really about and is committed to preserving the role of thousands of individual banks in their communities across America, which is really what makes America's economic system unique in the world. They should go to our website, Friends of Traditional Banking, sign up. And then as we move into the next election cycle, usually in about August or September before the November elections, we will send out a notice saying we've chosen these two races as the two most important races in banking. And if you're passionate about banking, send what you can to these two people. It's a little bit different way. We still encourage folks to send money to the Utah Bankers Association so we can make our PAC contributions.
Right.
But another tool in the toolbox geared to influencing policy so the banks can continue to thrive.
So let me kind of ask then. We're going to transition a little bit from there, and let's kind of scale this back a little bit from the large, and let's look more on a smaller scale. So if you were just a small bank, you've got 1-2 branches, and you're wanting to start influencing things that may benefit your bank more, how are you going to do that? Like, where are you going to look for? How are you going to start influencing things, even though you're such a small scale bank? How are you going to start doing stuff?
I would say that those banks have more influence than most, because they're invested in their community. They have those personal relationships. And this is why the alliance is so important, because typically even members of Congress, they are influenced by these big entities and the PACs and the parties, obviously, you know, in a big way. But in the end, they know they have to get elected in the communities that they serve and represent. Mm-hmm. So they're very interested in what the people on the street back home have to say, and especially to the extent you're able to build a relationship, take them to lunch. You get their cell phone number in your cell phone. I mean, mm-hmm. They are actually hungry for that feedback, because that's the feedback that counts. And that's why you have to have a state banking association in every state focused in on those managing and leveraging those relationships, the ones on Main Street. Because that's the one, you know, in Utah, for example, when Mitt Romney is looking to cast a vote on a tough banking issue, who do you think he calls? He doesn't call the ABA. Mm-hmm. I mean, he doesn't call some lobbyist in Washington, D.C. He doesn't call some interest group in Washington, D.C. He calls me. He calls a banker on Main Street in Utah. He really does. And he's got a handful in his cell phone that he'll say, hey, we're thinking about deposit insurance right now, and we're thinking about doing this or that. What do you think we should do? He wants to talk to people on the ground who understand about deposit insurance. And frankly, most senators, congressmen in the end are going to be highly persuaded by that input at the end of the day. I want to be careful about this, to the extent that they've been supportive of their campaigns, whether it's money or whether it's signs or whether it's hosting them in their home and introducing them to their neighbors. That's still how this process works. Mm-hmm. And that's why you have to have that being coordinated at a local level, you know, with the state banking association. That's my job, is to hold down the Utah component of that. We have 2 senators, we have 4 congressmen, we have thousands of bankers, and my job is to make sure that they know each other and they're communicating, and we're all on the same kind of path and same page, and that's in the end how that works. And that has to happen in every state. I can't do it in other states. Other states can't do it here. Can't do it from Beltway. There's no way you could execute that from the Beltway. It's a long answer to your question, but those are the bankers that make this all happen.
So really, you're saying that they should be getting involved in the Bankers Association. They should be getting their voice out there, getting heard, contacting you or the Utah Bankers Association, and really just saying like, hey, look, this is what we need. This is what we're looking for. This is what we're struggling with. And then in turn, it's your responsibility to really be that voice for them and to make sure that their voices are being heard. Is that an accurate reflection of what you're saying?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if if any banker, bank, let's say a bank CEO of any size bank, were to pick up the phone and call their congressman's office, say, hey, next time you're back in state, I'd like to have you into to our bank to see what we're doing. And we're going to invite our small business customers in, and we're going to have a lunch, or we're going to have a town hall. And we're going to, we want to talk to you about what's happening on the ground here. I don't know. It'd be hard for me to believe there'd be a congressperson out there that would say, I don't have time for that. I'm not going to do that. It's just a matter of picking up the phone and doing it. And especially if bankers were to bring in their small business customers and talk about what's happening in their local economy, in their local community, and maybe an issue or two, and try and keep it nonpartisan. Doesn't have to be Republican or Democrat or narrative driven, but just force them to step out of the beltway and out of the partisan stuff going on in immerse them in the reality of what's happening. Could be homelessness. It could be affordable housing. It could be, you know, any number of issues, how the immigration issue is affecting in either way, but the real impact, not the political narratives that are out there.
Yeah. And I completely agree with that. Like getting them submersed in the local environment and having them see like what's actually happening. I think that's very important. So unfortunately,
one of the reasons why this is so important is it's important that members of Congress see the banker is a central force in their local community. So that when they start talking about bank policy and we're going to punish the banks, we're going to do this, we're going to regulate them, we're going to force them, they need to understand that every time they do anything to the banks, it affects everyone in that community.
Right.
And by bringing them into a bank and bringing those other members of the community together and making sure the congressman connects those dots, then when they talk about bank policy, when they make decisions and they vote on bank policy, I think it changes their perspective when they see the bank for what it is, this central player in a broader economic ecosystem.
So Howard, we are running out of time, but I wanted to give you a chance to maybe give a brief, maybe about a 2 minute, a piece of advice. I like to ask all my members that if you could give one piece of advice for the banks and the individuals listening today, what piece of advice would you give them in today's market? What would you recommend they do?
Well, thanks, Daniel. This is a very important topic. I think the one piece of advice I would give bankers is to focus in on why they win. Why are people choosing them? Why do they succeed? What's that secret sauce? And then keep an eye clearly trained and integrate into their management a focus on all the things that are changing, whether it's payments, crypto, interest rates, technology, and make sure that the reasons why they win are aligned with all those things that are changing. So they don't wake up one morning doing what they've been doing for the last several decades and find that something has fundamentally changed to the point where that recipe no longer works.
Right.
This is strategic risk management and embedding that in every aspect of your bank so that everybody's got their eye out for those things is really important. That can supercharge your bank. You want all those changes to be supercharging what makes you successful. If you don't keep your eyes at every level on that, you're going to wake up one day and find out that the model you're pursuing isn't relevant, and that could be disastrous. And this is one of the things that we're focusing on in the Society of Bank Executives, which is another nationwide initiative to bring bank executives together with their peers. And if people want to know more about this, they can go to executives.bank. That's where the Society of Bank Executives website is located, executives.bank. And our next focus. We spend 6 months doing deep dives into these horizon level type topics like strategic risk, like culture. The very next thing we're focusing in on is strategic risk. And that's because I think that's what people have to keep their eyes on, especially as we're talking about potentially fundamental changes to FDIC insurance or FedNow and other really fundamental policies that are going to change the way banking works potentially.
Yeah, and I think that's great advice, is to really, really hone in on what the bank is doing great, and then to make sure you keep an eye on just the risk and everything that comes with the changing environment. Unfortunately, we're once more out of time. Howard, thank you very much for joining us for today's show.
Thanks, Daniel. It's good to be with you.
For the rest of our viewers, thank you for tuning in, and that's Banking Matters.